just checking with the secretary. If you said your wife, you are still trying to sort out the things behind me. We'll just continue with the minor administrative processes of the meeting. Welcome to this meeting today. First, I need to say I'm Mrs. Dunjwa, the member of the African National Congress, a whip to the Science and Technology Portfolio Committee. I want upfront to apologize for Dr. Ngcobo, who is the chair of this committee. He is out of the country on a trip to China. Somebody was saying yesterday, I don't know, everybody is going to China. Mm-hmm. You hear a person said, I'm from China. Others are from, others are to. We'll all be interested in that. He has gone that with about five chairpersons and the office of the speaker. So today you are under my, I don't want to say under my control, but you are under my whip. The unfortunate part that it's a meeting that is chaired by a whip. A whip then has got a tendency of wanting to whip everybody. So try and not subject yourself to that whip. Having said that, I will then request the members of the committee to introduce themselves who are on my right without any ideological orientation. They are on the right, and I see that you are on the left. We'll talk about that later, but on a more lighter note, on a more serious note, can we... I hope the report will reflect that you are on the left. That was on a lighter note. I will request then the honourable members to introduce themselves.
Honourable members, the leadership from the IR and citizens guests that are here, good morning. I am Nkosi Muelo Nongonyana, the member of the committee and the employee of the African National Congress from the OR Tambo region in the Eastern Cape.
Well, thanks, Chair. Well, I'm on the left as you come through the door. I'm Chair Rich Bailey, a member of the African National Congress. I come from Gauteng, a region called Tshwane, in an area not far away from the CSIR called Montana. And I'm happy to be here with you this morning. Thanks.
Good morning. I'm Sonamulo, a member of the committee, deployed by the Congress of the People. I'm from the Northern Cape, from the region Sianda in Abinte.
Good morning. I'm Marion Shin from the Democratic Alliance.
I will then hand over to you. For introduction.
Of the Parliament Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology, let me just introduce our team. I'm Francis Peterson. I'm the chairperson of the board of the CSIR, the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. And on my left, I'll introduce the CEO, Dr. Sibusiso Sibisi. And then we have a suite of group executives that forms part of the executive team of the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. We have Kundeka Njobu, who's the group executive responsible for R&D outcomes and strategic human capital development. Then we have Tulani Glamini, who's the group executive responsible for research and development. Then we have Hofi Maria, who's the group executive responsible for operations. And then we have Reynold Zondu, who is the Executive Director for Services at the CSIR. And then we have Chris Sturdy, who is the Chief Financial Officer of the CSIR. Well, thank you, Jay.
There are other ladies behind you that must also introduce themselves.
Yeah, can I just ask them maybe to introduce themselves at the back? Thank you.
Ntabi Mawela, DST Ministry.
Manana Makanya from CSIR Communication.
Aziza Frederick from CSIR Parliamentary Office.
Mm-hmm. I'm Caroline Kutzer from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Next to me, although she is doing something, the secretary of the committee, Ms. Sanaz Isaac. No, thank you very much. I will, because today we, and there is an assistant there, he is going out. I would have thought that he would also introduce himself. There are other gentlemen that are coming. Let's allow them to be settled so that we then finish our introduction. As they are getting finding their seats, I will request them to introduce themselves. You'll pick up that we are in a hall, a big hall. I would humbly request that when we then speak, at least we keep a little bit of a distance from a mic so that it does not, the echo does not overcrowd and take over our conversation. I will request, we have also been joined by another member. The Honorable will introduce herself. She is one of the members, new members that have joined the committee. In the committee, and I think it's important for us to also say that the Honourable Tibeti is also joined the committee in the last month, and the Honourable next to him will introduce herself, but he's one of the new ones that have joined. They're not new in time. But they are new here in science and technology. Honorable, introduce yourself.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Members, most of you know me. I'm Ellen Line. I'm from the Northern Cape, and I was transferred to science and technology. I don't know why, but I don't have the background of science and technology. Thank you.
Over to you. Three gentlemen that came have not introduced themselves.
Thanks, Sir President. My name is Leander. My name is Grant, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Ministry. Thanks.
My name is Lucky Kumalo from the Department of Science and Technology.
Thanks, Chair President. My name is Isaac Marin from the Department of Science and Technology.
No, thank you very much. I just want to say to Honorable Helen Lai, she must be comfortable. This is this portfolio committee, it's one of the best portfolio committees, because everything revolves around it, whether we like it or not. Our life is about science and technology, and therefore all the entities of science and technology makes our life exciting. I was just like her, but I then told myself that, well, I'm not a scientist. I've never been one, but science is not, scientists are in the department. It's the department that must be them. But it's quite an exciting portfolio committee. With around the CSIR, it's one of the entities that have captured my soul and my mind. Dr. Sibisi, I so wish to go back to that oversight. The number of things that I have learned
which I do think that if this committee can dedicate its effort and the focus and its energy to SIIR, with CSIR, we can change the life of our people for the better. And I'm still going to come. There's a project that captured my mind. And day in and day out, Dr. Sibisi, I'm thinking about that project. Otherwise, we're handing over to you. The only thing that I want to say in this delegation from CSIR, it's male dominated. I'm not quite sure why, but as we will be discussing the report, maybe that will reflect. With that, I'm handing over to you for the presentation of the annual report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Acting Chairperson. So, Acting Chairperson of the Parliament Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology, Ms. Vinjo, honourable members of the Parliament Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology, on behalf of the board and the CSR and the executive team of the CSIR, I want to say thank you for providing us this opportunity to be able to present the annual report 2009/2010 to the committee. The presentation, Chair, will be interactive. I will start off by just introducing the presentation and probably talk to the first two slides, and then I'll hand over to the Chief Executive Officer that will then bring in at various moments during the presentation part of his executive team to either comment or speak to certain sections of the presentation. The presentation, we're probably going to be about 45 to about 50 minutes, if that's fine with you, Chair, and then we will then deal with the questions thereafter. So I'm going to start off with the first slide, and you should have the presentation in front of you, but it's also on the screen. I don't know how clear that is from where you sit. First of all, the outline of the presentation is going to be focusing on the performance of the CSIR very briefly on against the organisational priorities that we have set out for ourselves as the organisation, signed off by the board and also presented to the Department of Science and Technology. Those priorities mainly speaks to building and transforming our human capital base. The second one is strengthening the science, engineering and technology base, and also look at transferring technology and skill, human resource or human capital. The third one speaks, which is not there, but it actually speaks to the transferring of the human capital and technology to society and also to industry. And then the fourth one talked to financial sustainability and good governance. So those are the organisational priorities, and I'll just briefly in the second slide we'll talk to those overall, how we have done as an organisation, and during the presentation there will be a more detailed drill down in some of those areas to show Chair, how well we, or how have we done with respect to gender, demographics and so on. We also will, during the course of the presentation, showcase some of the research, selected research that's been undertaken in the organisation, and we will talk to some of those. There's obviously quite a wide range of research projects and projects in general that are being performed at the CSIR, so we wouldn't be able to talk on all of those. Hopefully, some of those that we won't mention here has been captured in the hard copy of the annual report. But obviously, our campus and our organisation is always open for visits from members of the committee. We also will talk to how the organisation has contributed to the information society, as well as how we assisted and facilitated enterprise development, which is obviously quite key in economic growth. And then finally, I will end off by focusing on the areas that the CSR has selected in terms of research that is more using the multidisciplinary advantage that the CSR has as an organization. And we often talk about the focus areas or impact areas, and I'll just briefly talk about that towards the end. So if we move to the second slide, this is just purely a summary, and we will go into more detail in the subsequent slides. I mentioned about the first organizational priority of building and transforming our human capital base. There has been some sustained progress towards achieving these objectives. We have been growing our science, engineering, and technology base, and some of the slides later on will talk to where that is at the moment. We, at the moment, sitting at about 64.8% of our total staff that is classified or categorized under the science and engineering technology grouping. We also have improved our distribution of qualifications, mainly masters and PhDs in the organization. And being a scientific organization, that's quite key that our staff, specifically our staff in our science, engineering and technology category, do have those qualifications. And then we also have made quite good progress in on the demographics part. And there will be slides that we will talk to that. Demographics, not only in terms of race, but also in terms of gender. And we will talk about that too. The second one, priority is strengthening the science, engineering and technology base. There we often measure our output in terms, besides the impact that our projects perform to society and to the industry at large, we also look at to what extent do we add to the knowledge to the science and the technology environment. And that's often expressed in terms of our publications. And we publish not only in good technical papers in journals, we also have books that there are chapters that some of our work appear in. There are also conferences that we normally go to around the globe to be able to talk about what we're doing, but also to assimilate and find out new ideas which we can bring back to the CSR. Now that publication target at the board, we signed off on that target. And that has been exceeded for this year, and the CEO, or one of his group executives, will talk about that a little bit later. We also believe in collaboration, and you will all see that our links with industry, with other science councils in South Africa, with similar organizations abroad, with universities, has also strengthened, and not only strengthened in terms of impact, but also have strengthened in terms of the quantity of links that we have developed. And, you know, world-class research, we believe we're doing and performing world-class research, but it's probably up to you to comment on that too. Transferring our technology and human capital, in one of my slides towards the end, I will talk about the six areas, the impact areas, that we have selected as a CSR to strengthen our impact to society and to industry. Now, you can do good projects, you can do good research, but ultimately, does that actually make a difference in the lives of people in South Africa? And that's, in fact, part of our mandate. And later on, I will talk to you the areas of health, of the natural environment, of energy, where we play in. And you will also pick up some of those things as selected projects in the presentation. And then finally, Chair, on this slide, we're talking about financial sustainability and good corporate governance. This is something that the board is passionate about, and I can tell you that executives share the same passion. of having an organization that we not only produce good science, good technologies, strong human capital, but it's an organization that we in the science community, but also as South Africans, can be proud of in the way in which it's governed. We have yet again had an unqualified audit, and then also our financials, keeping in mind the last 2 years with the economic crisis that hit the world economy, we still, as an organization, have exceeded our targets, financial targets that was put forward to the board and signed off by the Department of Science and Technology. So I'm gonna, I just wanted to give that as a way of introduction, Chair, and then I'm gonna hand over to the Chief Executive Officer to take the presentation forward in more detail.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Should I continue, or did you want the member who's coming to introduce herself?
I beg you?
Should I just continue?
Yes, I think you
If I may, Chair, allow me to make a comment prompted by the comment made by the new member, honourable member, concerning science and technology. It's always a delight, incidentally, to interact with the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology, as CSIR. Now, our challenge, as we see it, is always to put across what we do in such a manner that it is comprehensible, because after all, what we are about is conducting research in order to make a difference, to have impact, and we must be able to communicate the nature of the impact in terms that are not scientific. If we get lost in technical jargon, then by all means feel free to stop us, interrupt us, and ask us, but exactly what is the high-level issue, question that you are addressing. I'm the first to admit, a skill that we are all painfully aware of not always having, the ability to communicate in simple terms, in clear terms, what it is that science is about, to the extent that it relates to making a difference in society and economy. I also want to take this opportunity. I've been at CSIR quite a while now, in excess of 8 years. Throughout the period that I've been at CSIR, I've had the good fortune of working with a very supportive and committed board, as represented by our chairman who joined us here today, and an equally good set of good executives and other people within the organization. It makes my own role fairly easy, because I can always delegate, and this is what I intend to do. I'll get them to do most of the talking and on the interject, on the odd occasion. So the fact that I'm once again sandwiched between the board chair and my group executives is not entirely fortuitous. It's representative of the support that one has on an ongoing basis. And on that note, I want also to acknowledge other members of the organization, some of whom are sitting behind me here and to our right, who always support us very professionally indeed, including our parliamentary liaison officer. But let me then proceed on that note, and indeed immediately look at the first area, building and transforming human capital, and call upon my group executive colleague here to guide us through a few slides, and I'll call upon her again to take us through some of the work that we're conducting by way of the downstream outcomes and impact of the work that we do at CSIR. So,
thank you very much. Thank you very much, CEO. The CEO delegates, and but he gets to answer all the hard questions. So it's a pleasure for you to accept the delegation. I think the chair of the board has already highlighted that building and transforming human capital is a key priority of the CSIR. We've actually been pursuing these four strategic objectives, I think, for about 5 years now, following quite a solid strategy. And in the annual report, members, I think we've covered comprehensively the set of programs that we're driving to achieve the objectives that the CSIR has set for itself. So really the presentation will, what we highlight in the presentation is just to show you some of the key performance indicators and how we're doing in relative to those. If you could just do the next slide. I think the first, one of the things we've been trying to achieve for the last 5 years is to change the profile of the CSIR skills base to have its composition significantly being the science, engineering and technology skills and keep the number of what I would call functional support staff at a certain number. So the target we had was to achieve the 65% of our staff being science and engineering and technology based, and we just more or less met that target, as it shows there. We also show, if you could just pull up or suppress the button, where we come from when we started off with this strategy, and as you can see, that profile has changed significantly since we started in 05, 06. With this particular strategy. The second element in terms of profile is in terms of our qualifications. We wanted, obviously, with the strengthening of science and technology base of the organization, to ensure that we've got quite a significant number of people qualified with master's and PhD qualifications, those being a proxy for the ability to conduct world-class research. And that number is growing steadily. I think there are obviously constraints in the system to achieve those numbers in significant amounts, but we're also seeing from our side the fruits of our investment in human capital, encouraging our own staff to study, but also supporting a number of students through a variety of programs as highlighted. It's paying off, but it to achieve really significant growth is something that we have to be patient with. But we're pleased to say that we've achieved or exceeded the target we set for ourselves. And again, once again, if you look at where we come from in that regard, I think we are proud. But the long road ahead is an arduous one, so we have to appreciate that with the constraints we have. If you could just move me to the next slide, then. The other aspect of our people strategies is obviously on transformation. I think it's a particularly important imperative, this being South Africa. Once again, we track, in particular in our science, engineering, and technology base, the number of black people as well as women. I'm not going to answer the question around the diversity the gender diversity of our team. This is a hard question for the CEO that he can answer. But nevertheless, we in terms of the targets we set on the number of black people in our science and technology base, unfortunately, we fell just below the target we set for ourselves there. And this has triggered a whole range of initiatives, particularly this year, to really refocus our transformation strategy. The reality is that, what we're looking for to be able to change that profile is a very highly skilled group of people, but it's a very small pool. And one of the key strategies, of course, is to recruit from the market, and you don't always find these individuals in huge numbers and there's huge competition, but also to grow them internally. And you'll see in our pipeline strategies that there's really hope for future to really see a different picture. But again, if you look at where we come from, if you could just press the button, we actually come from a position where in 06, 07, this is when we started tracking this particular target. We were sitting at about 49% of the third base being black people. And I think that tells a story about our commitment to work on this. Gender is particularly challenging. Our profile is particularly challenging. We stayed more or less at a steady profile since we started, and this requires in particular a lot more effort, even more than we have to put in terms of getting black people there. But I think here we've seen again in relation to our target, we just met it. I don't think it's a picture we're comfortable with at all, but we also know that it's one of those we have to invest for the long term in actually changing it. So that's the transformation profile of the CSR. There are particular parts of the organization that I think lend themselves to achieving good gender diversity, but there are others that are actually quite big challenges. For example, where we have strong engineering, we need strong engineering capability. You can just see the numbers start going down. Overall, as an organization, in terms of gender, we sit at about 47% women. So, but obviously the picture changes for set days. In terms of black people, we sit at about 56% black people. So overall, it's not looking bad, but I think where the core skills of the organization lie, we have to do a lot more work. So I just wanted to make those few comments there. And then lastly, if you could just move me to the next slide. This is regarding our investment. This is the future of the CSR. And this is, I think, for me, one of the greatest stories in terms of our human capital strategies in the organization. We launched, as you can see there, quite a number of programs to basically grow, if you want to call it, our own timber. And to ensure that, again, in the next couple of years, we're able to change those profiles I was talking about in terms of qualifications, but also in terms of race. If you could just move. Yeah. I think again, that trend there tells a really good story for us, and it's a story we're very proud of. If you could look at where we were in terms of the number of buses in 2005-06 and where we are today, and then our studentship program, this being full-time students based on our campus and studying for master's and PhD degrees, if you look at where we are, when we started tracking that particular program in 2006-07, and where we are today, it really tells a fantastic story. So we're really doing very well there, and of course our internship program is also doing very well. So this is where we are. I think as a chairperson summarized, we are really making sustained progress towards achieving the objectives we set for ourselves. And it continues to be a challenge, but I think we're seeing encouraging signs of investing and being consistent in what you do if you want to change the kind of change you need in our organization. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Kung.
I would suggest, the CEO, that you continue the presentation and then you come to the end so that we are then able to ask questions in that session. I hope members will be comfortable with that. Okay, so you can continue.
Sure. Before we talk about specific project examples of the things that we do and the impacts that they either are making or intended to make, let's talk a little bit more about the high-level picture. Strengthening the science and engineering and technology base involves, amongst other things, I must emphasize, publications in science journals, patents. These are things that you can measure, and track, quantify fairly easily. But there's a variety of other forms of output that we have not necessarily spoken about explicitly here. And with regard to publications, perhaps may I introduce the group of relative research to talk to us.
Thank you very much, Dr. Felicity. As my colleague has already indicated, part of ensuring that we have a strong science, engineering, and technology base within the organization is investing in developing the capacity within the organization. And of course, ensuring that the work that then gets done within the organization is of a world-class nature. We have proxies that we use to assess this, as Dr. Smith has already indicated, and what we'd like to share with you are just some of those proxies. For instance, if you look at the number of applications that the organization has produced over the years, you see a very positive steady growth in terms of the publications that we produce, which is an indication that the researcher productivity within the organization is growing over that period. We have a proxy to use for this in terms of the number of publications produced per researcher, which has grown significantly between the period 2008-09 and the period under which we are reporting. But that is not the full story, because you also need to look at the quality of the work that gets conducted within the organization. And there, if you look, for instance, at the type of journals in which the organization is publishing its work, a proxy for this is something called the Journal Impact Factor. We see that it's growing over this period, that more and more journals, more and more papers that are produced within the organization are published in journals of very high standing. But even more so, we're seeing over the years a number of publications produced within the CSIR being included in the front page of the journal in which we publish. Now, for a scientist, having your paper indicated in the front page of a journal, it's a significant compliment, and it's an indication of the quality of the work that is being conducted. So I think overall we can say that over the period we've seen a significant increase in terms of the quality of the work, but also the quantity of the work that gets conducted within the organization. If we...
Thank you, Tulane. The next slide, if I may request the next one, is a slide on our patent. We often protect the intellectual, the work that we do, the outcomes of our research, where it is applicable to do so, through the formal step of taking a patent on that piece of work. And a lot of these patents are international, and that is the cumulative number, the total number of patents, and that's what it stood at in 2009-10, just shy of 200, but in fact it includes other patents that remain active that have been accumulated over previous years. So there were 13 new international national patents granted, international patents granted in the year 2009-10, and 38 inventions disclosed. These are inventions that might lead to a patent or might take a different route. And on the right there, the pictures that we're looking at are examples of the areas where we hold patents, a suite of patents for treatment of acid mine drainage, and indeed there's ongoing research in this area, but in fact there's a pilot plant that is based on the technology that we've developed at CSIR over a long period of time, and something that started in the 80s. Licensed patents to an external company for pasteurized eggs, safe eggs, and compounds active against the malaria parasite. This is ongoing research, and there are various other examples that you can give, and perhaps we'll talk in a bit more detail about some of those as we proceed. For now, I just want to round off this first section by talking a little about financial sustainability and good governance, and may I ask the CFO to come in and respond.
Good morning, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. I have the opportunity to look at a number of financial statements of various entities in my position, and I always check two things, and I suspect you may do the same. The first thing I always check is there an unqualified audit report? And the second thing I check is this an entity that needs a government bailout? I look at the bottom line and the strength of the balance sheet. And I'm happy to report in the case of the CSR, we have once again an unqualified report from the Auditor General. And in terms of our bottom line and our balance sheet, in very tough financial circumstances, we have a net profit of 52 million. That forms part of our reserves and will be reinvested in terms of our mandate. And our balance sheet remains strong to support future investments in scientific infrastructure and new endeavours. If you look at our income streams, and if you could hit the button, please, our total operating income increased by 14.1%. We are now 1.6 billion rand turnover organization. Our baseline PG, which is allocated to us from the ST, increased by 6.9%. And contract income up by 21.9% from the previous year. And I think all in all, a solid financial performance considering the recessionary economy we were facing. Thank you.
Let's then move on to a section that discusses a selection of research undertaken to give a flavor of the sort of thing that we have been doing. We do not claim that, although this you are speaking to the annual report of 09-10, we do not suggest for one moment that we are talking only about work that was done in 09-10. The projects are long-term, so a lot of it is ongoing work over a number of years, and it may still be continuing. And let's start with the first example of hospital ward design. And the structure, to limit the spread of tuberculosis, let's move on to the next slide. The structure of all the examples we're going to give is as shown there, where we first identify very clearly what is the challenge to which we are wanting to respond through science and technology, through the activities that we are mandated to conduct as CSIR, and then give a sense of the research that we're then conducting to respond to the challenge, and then look at the outcome. In other words, have we been able to actually effectively respond to the challenge as we articulated it? In some instances, we may only have partially responded to it. The work may still be ongoing, and there may even be instances where you, as you proceed, you redefine the challenge, or you find perhaps applications in other areas that are equally interesting. And in this particular instance, the challenge is articulated very clearly there: insufficient infrastructure for the growing TB epidemic. There's a burden that we all know about of multi-drug-resistant TB, extremely drug-resistant TB, where arriving largely from people who have TB, perhaps stopping medication early, prematurely, for a variety of reasons, and we might talk to that as well, because we have also been thinking about mechanisms to enhance compliance so that people, to just make it easier to take the medication so that people will take it through the requisite period. Anyway, the challenge here is that we then want to do the best you can in TB hospitals to reduce cross-infection amongst people who've got, not only those who've got drug-resistant TB, but also in particular those who have TB, but are in the same hospital, but are not XDR or MDR TB. How can you design your wards within a hospital in such a manner that you take into account the minimization of cross-infection? And so the research that we then looked at was as described under the next topic. We reviewed international guidelines and adapted them for local requirements and various conditions. And here's an interesting thing here, that a strength, if you were to ask me what is the big strength of CSIR, it is the multidisciplinarity, the fact that there are people who work in different areas who can come together and address a particular challenge. And sometimes it may be an area that may seem completely unrelated to the problem in question. For example, people working in a technical area called computational fluid dynamics, who study the manner in which air moves, objects, for example, move through air. A lot of the time, the application is in, say, designing aeroplanes, for the sake of argument, and how they propagate through the atmosphere. But you might also then use it to just model the manner in which draft, the wind circulates outside of buildings and inside buildings, and model that, and then try to design your wards in such a manner that the draft wind circulation is such as to minimize exactly that phenomenon of cross-infection across wards. And with international donor funding, we developed this work further, and the outcome is that as indicated there, the 7 provincial departments of health, which will have improved TB infrastructure, that's 460 new beds, and each at 9 hospitals in 7 provinces. So I believe that there is, in fact,
a video at this point, which you are ready to show.
Program, although previously we never were involved with the constructing hospitals, have had to take on the responsibility of refurbishing some of the hospitals where we give TB patients and building new units as well. And this is due by securing funds from donors like the Global Fund and utilizing institutions like the CSIR to help us refurbish existing TB hospitals that are not meeting requirements and also building new ones.
Fatima, what is your work here at the CSIR?
We are looking into different technologies to minimize the transmission of tuberculosis in hospitals. So what we do is we bring these technologies into the wind tunnel and we test the performance under different wind conditions. In that way, we can establish if these technologies are able to remove tuberculosis particles from the host space, and we can test different technologies and choose which ones would perform best.
Of the sort of interventions that we would look at as if, incidentally, what we saw the wind tunnel, those are facilities, we shall also make reference, the facilities which have been in place for a while, which are essential for the conducting of scientific research. Sometimes big facilities like wind tunnels like that, or it is just equipment, but it may be very expensive equipment. And a lot of the time we will then also share the use of that equipment with other researchers in other parts of the research system, such as universities and so on. But let's move on. We don't have very much time, and we're not going to speak to each and every one of the examples that are given in the handout that you have, the harbor one, so we can talk about that, but let's move on to, say, the laser technology one, and Maya, once again, call upon Dr. Jamini, who, as it happens, used to run the National Laser Center at CSIR. In fact, all the group executives, the three group executives sitting to my left here have had the experience of actually running operations in particular units, and of course, Dr. Murray is overall operations director too, but Tudani, once again, please.
Thank you very much, Dr. Smith. Within the organization, we develop a number of technologies that we deploy to support various industries. The example that I would like to share with you, it's actually two examples. One is work that we've done in partnership with the research arm of JBS called Elmensis, as well as the work that we did in partnership with ESCOM. I'll focus on the ESCOM example. One of the requirements of the Quebec power plant as part of their operating license is that they keep large volumes of water that can be utilized in case there is a need to cool the nuclear reactor in an emergency. Now, the challenge that they've experienced is that the reservoirs that are used to keep this water develop hairline cracks over time. And of course, this water fits, and as a result of that, then they are not in compliance with the operating license. There are conventional methods that you can use, of course, to repair these cracks, and these require that you empty the reservoirs. And during that time, of course, you cannot operate and repair the cracks using conventional welding methods. Within the CSIR and in partnership with ESCOM, we've developed a technique which is based on laser technology, which can be used to repair these reservoirs in situ. By that we mean that you don't need to empty these reservoirs, so you can repair them whilst they still retain the large volumes of water that they have. And these are large reservoirs extending as far as 20 meters up. So it's a significant effort even to just empty them. But of course, with the technology we've developed, which is an in situ based technique, you of course cut down on the downtime and of course minimize disruptions in terms of the operation of the Cooper power plant. We have developed this technology, we've demonstrated it, and we are currently piloting it within the Cooper power station. Of course, this could have a significant impact in terms of the continuous operation of the Cooper power station. Thank you.
Thank you, Tulani. Let's move on then to some examples that are about stimulating industry. There's an explicit statement in the mandate of the CSIR that we should conduct research and technology innovation with the intention of fostering industrial development. Now, industrial development can take the form, for example, of starting up a company and or protecting intellectual property, a startup company, or perhaps more challengingly, starting a whole new area of industry that does not yet exist in South Africa. It's also, of course, about supporting existing industries in whatever way that you can. But it is particularly challenging when you need to intervene and do a lot of research work in order to enable South Africa to enter areas that are going to make South Africa more competitive in the world, but where there's no industrial activity yet in that area. Case in point, which is very exciting, is that of titanium. We mine a lot of titanium in the country. Now, are there ways in which you can, as we talk a lot about value addition, beneficiation, what is the role of CSIR in an area like that? And the second one is on sent and deployed technology is actually already being used. But let me ask Dr. Murray, who in fact also used to run the unit that was closest to industry in the activities that it conducted, to speak to both of those. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, CEO, as well. Titanium, why titanium? Titanium as a metal is very light and very strong. And for those of us that travel in aircraft, we would like to have light and strong materials around us as we go through the air. But what is also interesting, titanium is very difficult to produce as a metal. And once you have the metal, it's very difficult to machine it and to form it and to produce the parts, the components from it. In this case, there's already a very strong market. We've had interactions with Boeing and Airbus, and they are very keen for us to establish a local industry on this. And we're talking about a potential industry of in excess of R1 billion per annum. So the market is there. On the other side, we have some of the best titanium deposits. There are some complications. Some of these deposits are in environmentally sensitive areas, but that's a separate discussion. So I just want to acknowledge that we know about that. So the research is then, how do we make metal from these deposits? And once we have the metal, how can we cast it and form it? And we have developed a process now in the laboratory which we would like to scale up. It's one thing to achieve metal production in the lab, but how do you scale it up? So we are in a discussion with the IDC and the DGs of, through the DG of Science and Technology, with the Economic Cluster DGs, about first a pilot scale plant and then a scale up to a full-size plant. We are talking significant industries here. We're talking a potential R1 billion per annum industry, but the investment could be a few R1 billion. So you have to go through these stage gates to achieve that. We have now developed a two-pronged approach. On the one side, trying to make the metal, and then regardless of whether we make it or whether we get it, how do we machine it and form it? And we've made very good progress on both sides. I still think the difficulty is going to be making the metal locally. But on the forming and machining side, we've made good progress. And with the DST support, we are in the process of setting up a titanium center of competence where we will interact with industry players, with international aerospace companies and some international universities, and then, of course, our own universities and the CSIR itself. If I can just say this, titanium and magnesium are the kind of metals of the future. And as they say about, you know that song about New York, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. If we can make those metals here, we can make any metal. And we can achieve. But at least the other benefit of this whole exercise is we're building a very strong South African knowledge base on handling these complicated metals and even combinations of them and alloys. is where you put them together. Yeah. Okay? So if I can then go on to the other one, sense and deploy technologies. Now, before we go on to the slide, just to say, we all know about these terrible cat heists. And they are typically violent and they fast. So what can we do about that? We can either have more guards that can be more violent and shoot back, or we can apply science and say, how can we make it slow? Because that's not what the criminals like. They wouldn't like the cash heist to become slow. So we have done some work, and we reported that previously to this committee, about the cash and transit vehicles that make it very difficult to run them off the road. It makes it very difficult to break them open, and we have reported on that, and there's a whole industry now deploying these vehicles, and more than 400 has been deployed. This time we would like to go inside the vehicle. If there's a cash box inside the vehicle and there's a million or a few million rand, how can we make it difficult for the criminals to get their hands on that? And if we can then... Sorry, can I just go back to the first slide? If you can just go back. Yes. If you look at the bottom right-hand corner there, that thing that looks like a bread, okay? That's a chunk of polyurethane foam that's hardened up. Inside that bread, there's probably a few million rand. But to get to it, it's going to take you a few days to cut it open. That's not what the criminals would do, heists like to do, because by that time the police is going to get there, okay? So the whole plan is we encapsulate the cash in this kind of bread of polyurethane foam. If we can then move on to the next slide. So the whole idea was, how do we protect those actions? And the sensor deploy technologies, they dispense this foam immediately, like in a few seconds. This whole boot of this cash and transit vehicle is full of foam, and the cash is somewhere inside there. You can't get your little dirty hands on it, even if you want to, okay? If you try to get in before the foam goes, they might cut you out later, but you will probably not make it, okay? This has worked very well. Even this dispenser even goes off. Should the vehicle be turned over, then this thing seals up. And it has been used very much in South Africa, but it's now moving into Nigeria, Brazil, Spain, Portugal, and I understand the USA is now even interested in some of these things. And then the question is, did it work? The answer is, there's been no successful attacks. The interesting thing is how the message gets through. These vehicles that are equipped with this equipment, they don't seem to be attacked anymore. The criminals are actually not stupid. They know where to go. This is not the place to go anymore. As a matter of fact, I'll stop now, CEO, but there's now the problem. If the moment when you now move the cash from the vehicle to the bank, and we're even working on a mobile thing that can do something similar to this, because that's now a vulnerable point there. Okay. But it's just using chemical understanding of polyurethane and sensing technologies and putting them all together and producing a thing that really has an influence on a problem.
Thank you. Thank you, Hoffi. Clearly, we are very passionate about the work that we do, so I won't go. You can talk about it all day, but yeah, this is really examples of very clear impact in a variety of areas. But allow me to speed up, if I may, because I'm keenly aware of time constraints, Chair. Let me talk a little about the work that we are doing in the defense, safety, and security area. Starting with supporting the Air Force and making the most of its equipment. One must understand that when you have a platform like a Gripen fighter, there's a whole set of other associated things. It's a very, very advanced piece of highly intelligent machinery. For example, it is very complex to fly. It requires what is called fly-by-wire technology. What that means, basically, in a nutshell, is that Unlike your regular aircraft, the one that I was riding in coming here, it's windy and it gets turbulent, but it always restabilizes and settles and continues. These fighter, these aircraft like the Gripen are designed deliberately to be unstable, so that a little perturbation just throws it out. And this is for good reason, so that when it's moving at speed and there's, say, a weapon aimed at it, it can quickly switch and then get out of the way of the hostile weapon. Now, the consequence of that is that things happen so quickly, there's no way that a human being can react that speedily. So it's not piloted by people. It's piloted by software, and it's not flying by wire means. When things go wrong, then the option you have, really, and hopefully they don't go wrong, is to simply parachute out. But that's the nature of, that's how complex and intelligent these things are. So we've been involved in technologies to do with getting to use such advanced machines in a manner that makes them usable for the purpose that they were acquired. And one of the a particular expertise that we have nurtured that is respected internationally at CSIR is radar technology, which is a mechanism for these fighter aircraft to see, to see, recognize other objects out there, and not just see them, but also classify them. If this kind of object is that far away, and then it can take action on what to do, friend or foe. This is also used in non-military, non-combat situations, the radar technology just for regular navigation. And in fact, I'll speak very briefly in a moment about the use of these technologies around the Soccer World Cup that took place recently. But what we're seeing described on the slide there, it is what the technical challenge is and what the research and development is, the use of radar in order to enhance the ability of these aircraft to do precisely what they are called upon to do, such as identifying objects out there, and to understand better what fly-by-wire means, and also to be able to do, and this is very important, to do tactics development on a desktop, on the computer, by simulating, rather than, it's prohibitively expensive to keep flying aircraft like that each time you want to learn anything about them. Each time you take it off the ground, it's phenomenally expensive. But you can simulate very realistically a lot of what can happen through clever software on a desktop, on a computer. And these are some of the things that we've been doing, working on in close collaboration with the South African efforts. And the outcomes of that are indicated there, desktop simulation tools for simulating the behavior of a Gripen, as well as issues to do with handling and the eye, the eyesight, the radar of the aircraft. And that, in fact, had an application together with a variety of other related technologies in monitoring the skies, the safety above the Vera Stadia during the Soccer World Cup, and in fact a lot of the objects that are spotted, identified, and then you take a view on whether to take action or not. Is both the South African police service get bombarded by information from the sea, from the air, from the ground, and you have to take a decision. Is this an aircraft that's behaving suspiciously that you need to do something about, a boat that may be poaching, or is this a little plane above a stadium that may be up to no good, but you need to classify all of these objects quickly and then take appropriate action. And it was exactly the contribution both with regard to the intelligence on the Gripen, which did a lot of the spotting, but as well as our ability to pull together all of those information sources, which are very disparate. Radar, and in some cases, just visual pictures in other cases, and other forms of input, some of them from civilian sources, and then enable decision-making to be taken speedily by the South African Police Service. And so that really is a contribution, and I think the two need to be viewed together, both the support to Gripen and the FIFA World Cup one. And the outcome with regard to the FIFA World Cup is as indicated, contributed to SANDF security readiness. And the important thing there is that the lessons learned are to be used in broader in border protection applications, who are very active in using the self-same radar capability to take to monitor continuously, not only around borders with our country, but our territorial waters as well, which are quite substantial. And to have a presence all the time that tells you what are the objects that are moving around there and that are they behaving suspiciously or not is actually a major technological feat. And watch this space, which I'll tell you a lot more about that in the near future, on a project called AwareNet, which is very highly fascinating in this regard. But let's move on. We'll skip the next one in the interest of time in your pack on another point of care device. Let's move to the assessment Upper Olifant River catchment. Part of the research process is simply gathering data in order to enable decision making. We do all manner of things at CSI. We might be doing work on materials, the polyurethane example that was given, developing new products. But sometimes we're just wanting to understand what is happening. One of the things was, before you actually take action that may seek to ameliorate whatever problem that you have identified, whatever opportunity you may see. An example which is not discussed here is in energy, where people often say, well, why don't we use wind energy? We can generate so much using wind. It's true, but how much? And in order to be able to answer that question, you need to then map the patterns of wind through the year, throughout the country, so that you can say these are the optimal places to place wind farms, and this is what you can expect by way of energy generation. But the background input there is not necessarily the scientific research per se, it's simply collecting data very carefully so that you are able to base your decisions on being properly informed. This applies here too. The Upper Olifant River catchment is dirty, if the river is dirty. How dirty is it? You need to go out there and painstakingly take data, search for a variety of pollutants and so on, so that you can make definitive statements about the state of the river, so that appropriate action can then be taken. And this is what is being described here, that the variety of pollutants, acid mine, water from abandoned coal mines, atmospheric deposition from coal-fired power stations, and resulting in acid rain, runoff from agricultural land fertilizers, untreated runoff, effluent from feedlots, and so on. And in fact, there's a big problem with what is referred to as eutrophication, excessive growth of green algae due to untreated sewage. And this has overtaken, in fact, the impact of all other pollutants in the area. So that then helps, if that is the finding, that is a big problem right now, then that helps you in deciding where to start doing something about this. And so the research has been exactly as indicated. 26 sampling sites monitored in Napa Olifant River. A lot of work has gone into this. And the outcomes to data has indicated recommendations for remedial action to be included in the first year research report, as indicated there. And then further work needs to be done. Ideally, one wants to be able to do this with just various other resources of water that we have through the country, but one has got to start somewhere. So also development as an outcome of an algae index to indicate levels of pollution in rivers. And that's where we're at. So it's an important input for then taking decisions on how you ameliorate the problem. Let's move on to what is next one? Contribution to an information society. Digital doorway. We reported on this a few times in the past. We just want to take it through the history of it to give you a sense of where we started and where we are now. What the digital doorway is in a nutshell is what it was inspired by a concept that the Indians referred to as a hole in the wall, where you just put a computer there and you go away. You let kids in a village play and connect to the internet and learn to use the resources. And it was remarkable how quickly, without assistance by anybody, in particular the younger people, were able to start using it and start helping their parents, grown-ups, with getting helpful information on agriculture or indeed internet banking or whatever it may be. And so we started our own hole-in-the-wall type of what we call the digital doorway project. Has shown very early on can't quite fit it. Anyway, 2002, that's why we started, and that's what it looked like. And it evolved to multi-user four-seater. Those details underneath, the first technical details on the internals of the software engine that we used. And then started deploying them in a few places, Mamelodi, Mapela, Soshanguve. And modified, as you can see, from one user to four seaters, four users, and also modified to accommodate physically disabled users, and the three seater in places like Njongwini, and then started spreading to other parts of the continent, like Addis and Uganda. So people, the United Nations took a keen interest in this, and external aside, of course, from our own people in Department of Communications and so on, technically, and of course science and technology has been a prime driver. In Limpopo, you can see the design also looking better, but also getting more robust, both physically and in terms of the underlying software that drives it. And let's move on. Digital doorway in a suitcase, portable and container, solar powered, and in KwaZulu-Natal, and that's the story. The next slide shows the deployment in various parts of the country, 200 plus countrywide now, and close to 50 in other places. Now, this also raises an issue about the point at which you hand over, because we do research and we set up pilot plans, but to really say now we're going to have, say, 2,000, 10,000 of these, we'd have to work with people who are in the service delivery, telecommunications, IT business directly, but be that as it may, this is where we are. And so it's been a nice success story. And a related one is that the next project, connecting unconnected communities. We're using a CSR-developed technology that we call the wireless mesh network, which is actually, I've had a bit more time to talk more about it, but it's a very nice way of deploying connectivity, which can be broadband in a community, in particular in a community that is underserved, where there's no alternative infrastructure. And it is designed in such a way that it is not, it's a different philosophy from the philosophy of having a central operator and then everyone uses the services of that operator. In a sense, it's a community-type network where you receive signal and effectively pass it on to your neighbor and pass it on and so on. So each household then becomes part of, it becomes an operator. In effect, and you can deploy this at very low cost using very low cost technologies, in fact, if you construct this properly, you can have a community being able to talk amongst themselves and share information pretty much for free. Obviously, you have to then pay one of your licensed operators if you then want to communicate outside to the broader world, but. One is then able to, the outcome there is that local entrepreneurs get involved in building and operating a large area wireless network. And this is, we believe, an absolutely integral element of the vision of a broadband for all, that it must not just be left to big, large operators to deploy, but the community can take ownership of their own destiny. And I'll rest my voice at this point and perhaps ask that we deal with one more in the enterprise creation development, and then I'll make some concluding remarks. So who would like to take that one? Okay.
Chair, we have a group called the Enterprise Creation for Development Group. And what they do is they try to take knowledge-rich solutions, but not necessarily the most high-tech stuff, to communities where there are activities already and help them. Examples of this have in the past been, you might know about the hydroponics program in Beaufort West that links up with Woolworths and goes from Woolworths right through to Marks and Spencer's in London. And we helped with existing technologies the community there to establish this. We've done a similar one on the west coast around the lobsters. And basically the problem was just that These guys can get the lobsters out of the sea, but they don't have a very good way of holding them, packaging them, and getting them to the market. So this is not high science, this is practical science, or practical knowledge, technical knowledge. And we came up with a better holding facility that allowed them to hold the lobster alive for longer, and better packing room facilities, and then a link, which is very important, the link to the formal market. And suddenly, there are now co-ops established. They now own a company, and they have a formal, sustainable link to the market. And the numbers here are still very modest, as you can see. The income went from 7,500 to 30,000 per annum. That's still, you will agree with me, very low, but it's already a fourfold increase in income, and there's sustainability there. Just to say, we also have done similar things, like here in Cape Town, helped a small snook smoking factory to set themselves up much better with better quality control system. And the interesting thing was, once they started doing that, the other companies around them started latching onto that. And they say, well, there's a better way of doing some of these things. So that's just an example of knowledge application in real life.
May I then call upon the board chair to make some concluding remarks, and then we can move to questions.
Thank you very much. There's three slides, but I'm only going to talk to them very, very briefly, Chair. If we can go to the next slide. It's important, you've now heard some of the select research that we're doing within the CSIR, but it's important to ensure that our output is related to what government's priorities are as well. And I think that those are critical, because that speaks to the quality of life improvement that I mentioned earlier. And this slide just represents the impact, research impact areas that are within the CSIR and how they are linked with some of the government priorities. It speaks to healthcare, speaks to building a safer country, safer South Africa. It speaks to comparative and responsive infrastructure development, but also transferring technology to industry. It talks about rural settlement and how we can look at a sustainable scenario there. And it also talks about how do we in fact protect but also develop our natural resources and the environment. So those are the impact areas that is within the CSIR. And the next slide is just sort of a graphical representation of that. But the point I want to make is that to be able to deliver on these impact areas that speaks to the national priority, we leverage the multidisciplinary nature of the CSIR. So because there are different people with different skill sets and different areas of discipline, we can use that to be able to speak to the challenges either in health or in defense, or the challenges that we encounter in industry, or where we would like to develop a new type of industry. So the final slide really talks and just reminds the committee again to what the CSIR mandate is. It's in fact to perform directed multidisciplinary research driven by technological innovation, and that in fact could provide output that not only stimulate but develop industrial and scientific endeavors, and then through that hopefully will improve the quality of life of all South Africa. So Chair, I hope that presentation provided an overview to the honorary members of the committee. And we're obviously willing to deal with the questions. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, the person of the board. It was quite a relatively long presentation, but very informative, being able to give us the full view and understanding of what is transpiring in CSIR. and I do think that through that through the presentation and that members are going to ask questions, it's really going to enrich both our understanding, our view, our ambitions of what is it that we are to do, with the understanding that we are doing oversight in our area of work as members of parliament. As much as we monitor policy, we also go and do oversight. And in doing our oversight work, what is it that has been presented to us is going to empower us further to ensure that we strengthen our area of work, in particular focusing into the five priorities, but also now the executive has come up with the with other economic ways of ensuring that we generate the economy in our country, then this entity, how then are we going to ensure that we utilize it for the better? And then for me, I do think that the COO, the COO raised something that is very important, which I always, I'm always contesting it, that how they do ensure that we demystify the high language of science and technology for the betterment of our people. The high language and the technical stuff is for scientists, but for us and the ordinary people, that this institution, this entity is serving is serving the people through science and technology. Having said that, I will allow questions from members with the understanding that we are to be out here by at least quarter to one. Firsthand, Honorable Jacobus, Honorable Nongonyana, Honorable Shin, Honorable Molo Muleo, Mulao, Honorable Line, and the last in the order will be Honorable Kibit, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was hoping you were going to say we'll be out here by 12, latest 12. Chair, I just want to start off with a comment, and I hope you'll allow me to just put my questions and then all at once, and then it can be, you know, just, I'll keep quiet after that.
I think that's what I would recommend to the honourable, that let's just ask questions straight to the point, comments few, you do that at the same time so that we try and minimise time. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. And my comment, I'd like to start off by saying that this pertains to us as a committee. I don't know if we'll have time before the end of this parliamentary year, because I'm told we're finishing mid-November or somewhere around there. But maybe in the next year, when we start with our committee work and our oversight work, that I would suggest that maybe in our program, we also plan to visit some of the impact areas that were spoken by the last speaker, especially in terms of health, because a lot of interesting things were said. I think the presentation generally was very, very interesting and enlightening, as you said. But that we visit some of those areas, but it's for our attention, not necessarily for the CSIR. My first question, Chairperson, unfortunately the pages are not numbered, but it deals with the investment in human capital, that slide, where there are all those little columns there, in terms of bursaries and scholarships, studentships, and interns supported. I would like to know if we can get a breakdown, if the presenters don't have it now, if they can maybe forward it to us, in terms of where all those people are, in terms of the geographics of the country. Because I think the colleagues also know that the minister is very passionate about encouraging science and technology amongst learners across the country. And most of the time, majority of these people come from urban areas and not from rural and underdeveloped areas. They are left alone when it comes to those kinds of things. So I would like to know if we can get a breakdown of those numbers, you know, how many come from rural areas, from which provinces and so on. As I say, if the information is not here, we can always get it later in a written response. My second
second question, Chairperson, relates to the slide on sense and deployment. I think it's the laws of prayer that was spoken about. It's a very interesting concept. Just to ask, is there buy-in from security companies on this concept? Because I heard, Spencer mentioned Nigeria, Brazil, and whatever. But I'm talking about our South African companies who transport money every day, basically. And especially now, during the end of the year, towards the end of the year, people become desperate and you see an increase in cash in transit hands. The Fidelities and Coin Securities and those kinds of people, is there buy-in from them in this particular concept? Because I think it's a very, very interesting concept that I think should be pursued. I know the presenter said there are 600 units sold in South Africa, but I don't think it's closely to, what we actually need. The other question is about the South African Air Force and the detection of these small aircraft and whatever. I think there's also a problem with these private airstrips where a lot of poaching takes place, a lot of smuggling takes place, because if you look at the private airstrips, especially if you look at the former TBVC states, there are a lot of those, especially on farms, where little aircraft fly in, you don't know what they're doing, they're flying under the radar and stuff like that. Do we have the equipment to detect those? Because that is a serious security threat as well for us as a country and for everybody else. If we have that kind of technology to deal with those, especially those flying under the radar, for that matter. Then the digital doorways was very interesting for me. Just wanting to know if there's any collaboration with the Department of Social Development and particularly the disabled community. I'm not sure I was asking the chairperson here, those computers, because I don't know what exactly they are. They look like computers to me, that the disabled can use. But I think it would be very useful for especially the disabled community, social development, the Ministry of Women, Children and the Disabled, from government side, to kind of buy into that kind of technology. So just to ask if there's that kind of collaboration, because there's a lot of good work done and very interesting work done as well. And I think we must also actually visit the CSIR if they have this on site to go and look at what it is that you have told us about, instead of just seeing them on pictures. I think we should embark on that. Thanks, Chairperson. I think that's all my questions. Thank you.
Chair and members and guests, and thank you very much, Chair. For the opportunity. I think first of all and foremost is to really appreciate the presentation, Chair and the CEO and the executive. Thank you very much for this. Just to clarify me, I would first of all like you to indicate when you are using acronyms, at least at one point, just explain in full. But the acronym that you have used, there's another one on slide number 9, ISI General. Maybe something to do with international, but I tried, but I couldn't get clear. You can clear me there. I will appreciate there's another one, which is on slide number 23. Yeah, well, South Africa. The largest deposit of titanium, I think. But you use TI, metal. Titanium is TI. Okay. Thanks. Okay. Well, now, my question then, sir, is one on transformation. I think that you observed it earlier on. This is what I was thinking of, let's pick it up. to clarify. I see and observe what we term in legal jargon the modus operandi, or rather something that is similar manner. In your board, the composition of your board, I think there's one woman, I think. I saw that, and the senior management, similarly, one woman. If they can appear in that coincidence, around that issue. Then the second one, Chair, they are silent on scientific research on indigenous knowledge systems. Worrying, making me burn inside. I have not found anything. My impression is correct that the rural indigenous is really not the subject, not within their core business of research. I would like an explanation. Then on the issue of patent, which is similar to this question of indigenous knowledge, I see, yes, it's very good, the intellectual property being protected, it's fine. Again, here, I don't see anything pertaining to our own people who are undergoing the research. For instance, I know that many other of our people trying to come up with help to deal with this pandemic, HIV and AIDS. And I don't see any of the interest. I don't read in what has been presented before us, the interest in that regard. Bear in mind that people, our knowledge of our people, especially their intellectual, has been suppressed for so long. Then there is also another one. I hope that is the fourth question, sir. I'll restrict to five for now. There's another one on slide number 15 there. Just a question of to clarify the term, the Global Fund. For instance, the Global Fund of 92 million, for instance. And plus, of course, the 115 million registered provinces. But on the Global Fund, who are the funders of that Global Fund? And is that the word global, or is it just a term? Is it my understanding that it must be worldwide or something, and if so, who is behind that? The funding. And of course, in the provinces, are you able to give us an indication whether how many provinces? I've already noted that there are seven provinces, of course, nine hospitals and seven provinces. Clearly, there are two that are not. I don't know whether they are rural schools or what, but an indication if it can be given, whether you distribute it to those equally or proportionally. And if you can clarify that, I really appreciate it. Chair, let me then stop there for now, and I will reserve the others for the same round if you are going to give us.
Thank you. The next, Honorable Mula. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question is, can the CSIR name the provinces? the certain provinces, which provinces are they, and are they still going to make more research to ensure that other provinces also are going to be assisted? And the next question is your staff component. Is there any strategy in place that you maybe use to encourage also people with disability, so that whenever you advertise, they must also apply? So, and do you have some of them or not? And the third question is also on the digital doorway. How did you prioritize the areas that are having this digital doorway? And what if it happens that we know about provinces that are also having these deep rural areas that really are in need of this type of a system? And maybe having mining areas also whom you can lobby to assist in putting those stuff in place for those rural areas. I think that's all from my side. Thanks, Tepes.
Thank you, Jefferson. I'll focus my questions on the money. I wanted to know how the CSR actually substantiates its return on investment, perhaps by division. I mean, how does the taxpayer know that for the amount of money that we're giving you, that we're actually getting a return on investment in it? I want to know how you would measure that. Also wanting to know the division of payment, of how you, do you ring fence the money you get from a project? You say that all the expenses from a particular project will be paid only from that pot, or do you put it all in a big pot and just pay the bills from your whole kitty? And I ask that particularly because of your World Cup expenditure, where you spent over R500,000 on World Cup goodies, and you thought that it wasn't easy to justify this cost because it came out of Defence Force funds. And Defence Force is also funded by taxpayers, so I didn't buy that argument at all. But I wanted to see how you could actually say that this really wasn't subject to parliamentary oversight because it came from private money. And I want to know how you account for that. What is your accounting system that separates contract money from parliamentary grant money? Then your royalties, you earned $10.5 million from your royalties. And I know that's an increase, but it's still only 1% of turnover. Is there something, a reason why we're not getting enough or more money from our royalties? Because you're producing a lot of good stuff. Can you please explain that, why we're not getting more from royalties? Your R52 million profit, how are you going to reinvest that? Can you be specific on some details of, you said you're going to reinvest it, are you going to buy better equipment? You know, I've been to the CSR in Stellenbosch, and I see some of the stuff is held together with blacky bands and stuff. And so are you going to be getting new equipment? Are you going to invest in staff? More branches, please can you explain how you're going to reinvest that $52 million? When I asked, this is just clarification on a written question that I sent to the Minister earlier this year about budget cuts, and she said the CSIR would be expected to cut, 35.4 million this year, 31.6 million next year, and just wanted to know what those cuts are, what is being pruned, if anything, or have you got an extra grant from the department for that? I think I'll leave that there. Thank you.
Honourable Lee. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, I think I will quote what my colleague from the Northern Cape has asked, but mine will be, is the Northern Cape part of the seven provinces which is going to get us does improve TB infrastructure, because we are having a very, very high number of new TB infections in the Campbell area, near Kimberley, and it's growing every day. And my next question will be on the SKA project. We all know that if we can warn the SK8 bit, the Carnarvon area is having a water shortage in your contextual area. And they are using borehole that is not reliable. And I want to know if you people have already stood down and plan how can the people in that area economically benefit from this SK8 project in terms of spin-offs and all those things. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tilly.
Well, thanks, Chair. Let me also add my voice in congratulating CSIR in terms of the unqualified support. I think the way they manage the resources is very good and encouraging. And also to say that much as they are not doing well in terms of gender, and I think in terms of generational mix, I think they are doing very well. My first take will be on the issue of health. A point has been made here that some buildings are not really appropriately designed to reduce cross infection. Now, and it also talks about insufficient infrastructure for the growing tuberculosis. I just want to find out, in terms of these kind of observations, whether one could arrive at a conclusion that says, or can ask the question, are we actually winning the battle against reduction of TB? Because points have been made several times that in a country like ours, it's unfortunate that people continue to die of TB, which is, in actual fact, a curable kind of disease. I'm raising a question, especially in the light of maybe what happened, even if it's not TB related, what happened at the Charlotte McGregor Hospital, where children died. Now, the question that comes to mind is whether those deaths were as a result of human error or technological failure. I don't know. I'm just wondering as to whether at this age can we still experience those kind of unfortunate situations. Secondly, it's around the issue of the boundaries. And I think I just want to add on what my colleague has said in terms of this question, to take it further just to find out whether the intake, are you also taking interns from former black universities, I would say. I would say maybe I would categorize them as coming from, if you like, some form of previously disadvantage in terms of the quality of education that they have received. The third one is in relation to titanium. Yeah, a point has been made here that South Africa has well second deposits of titanium. And the point is also made that it's difficult to cast and form as it reacts to oxygen when heated above 600 degrees Celsius and causing it to brittle. I assume brittle would mean it's hard, but maybe easy to break. Now, I want to find out, do we have titanium in South Africa? And in terms of the second point I made, the second observation you made, can you simplify it? If you say it's difficult to cast and form, can you just clarify and simplify it so that I have an understanding of what is actually meant in what you call practical science, something which is not as difficult as it felt to me currently. The last question relates to the 2010 FIFA World Cup. I think there are important outcomes that you arrived at in this particular matter. The one you say you contributed to improved operational processes and tactics. Also contributed to the readiness of subs and defense force. And the lessons learned can be used in the border protection applications. Now, my question really is, were these outcomes World Cup based? In other words, were they for 31 days or 30 days of the World Cup? Or will we experience the legacy of these things post the World Cup? Because I don't think, let me put it this way, I think some South Africans are beginning to say we were very good to protect them because we had visitors as a country. And I know that's the role of the police, and so I'm just raising this question in the light of technology now. Can we experience the legacy post 2010? And will this technology assist in a simple way ordinary men and women in blue to apply and reduce crime? Because the reduction of crime obviously logically will add to economic growth and investment in our country. Thank you.
Honourable Shin?
Yeah, there was one quick question I forgot to include. If I get all the finances, if I get the things, I haven't asked the service, I'd like to ask all the finances stuff together.
I want to ask
and
it's just
question,
one.
This is yours, just a brief one. May I? Thank you. I just wanted to know your budget doubled this year to 3.5 million. If you could perhaps just explain what the problem was.
No, thank you. For me, it's just two questions. Again, on TB. If one wants you, I want to rephrase. If in our doing oversight, you come across, for instance, in my area where I'm deployed, where my constituency is, there is a TB hospital. As I was listening, I just had a picture of the TB hospital. It's scary in terms of the cross infection. Now, what can a public representative do? Does he or she approach you directly to go and make some research, or do that through the Department of Health? I hope the latter is not the answer, because I would scream. The second one is, I think it's related to what Honorable Mulawa raised. In terms of, I'm coming from the Eastern Cape, okay? In terms of this, which is quite interesting, the DOI, digital DOI, some of us, our constituency offices are deep in the deep rural and in the peri-urban. Again, if a member has got an interest of having that in his or her area, what does he do? Does he come straight to you? And in some of the projects that we have seen, for instance, I've got an interest on the issue of a the best low-cost house that we saw when we made our oversight. What do we do? Which channel do we follow? Channels do we follow that are not going to frustrate us, but are going to enhance the work that we want to do through you? Those will be the last questions for me. And my response will be, I hope you will take us up to the last, up to 20 past 12 in responding. I hope so. I hope that was just correct. Or even earlier if you can. Thank you. Over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the honourable members for asking those questions. I will defer those questions to the CEO and the executive team, but there's just one
particular question which I would like to respond to chair the board, and that is related to the composition of the board. There was a question from an honourable member that he saw that there was only one female on the board, and I think he's absolutely correct. The composition of the board in the board of the CSIR is it's an independent board which is normally are appointed, in fact, which is appointed by the Department of Science and Technology. In fact, the Minister of Science and Technology would also bring that the names of the members to cabinet to also obviously inform cabinet who the members are. So we can only make certain recommendations to the minister, but ultimately it's the minister's prerogative to ultimately appoint the final members of the board. But obviously through the engagement with me as chair of the board and the minister, I also will bring that specific aspect under her attention. Thank you. So over to the CEO.
Thank you, Chair. We'll indeed try to be brief and answer all questions. I start at the very top, Honourable Chokobas, the HCD question, the detail on bears, where they're from, and so on. Do you want to take that on? Can provide all that information?
I think we'll need to provide the information. We don't have it ready here. We can certainly provide the analysis, but just to say that the recruitment process, we open it nationwide. And yes, there are certain areas where there is a challenge for which, but I will provide the details.
Sands on deploy, your next question, buy-in from security industry. Indeed, there is. Since you took that, you spoke to the issue, I hope I ask you to speak to it further.
Yes, there is. There's a company manufacturing the cash and transit vehicles locally, and they're looking at export. And then there are some of the local security companies have embraced this technology. And we cannot put it out there. We can only put it out through these companies. So yes, they have. But not all of them have, you know, but that's the market thing.
Sorry, sir. If I may add on that, just a note. One of the companies that have embraced the technology and the vehicle have recently been voted by Lloyd's of London as the best cash in transit company worldwide. So there is recognition in terms of the state of these technologies, and I think that'll go a long way to getting the industry on board.
Thank you. Question three, detecting, for example, small crafts landing on streets and poaching undetected and leaving. You see, the example we often give of our technology, the technology we're referring to as AwareNet for persistent ubiquitous monitoring of the borders, is in fact able to detect to levels much finer than small aircraft. We are getting to a point, exactly in the context, for example, of rhino poaching, of being able to use radar to sense if the object we're seeing is, one, a person, two, are they carrying a long rifle? Or it could be mistaken, of course, it could be something else. But you are able then to begin to respond in a very targeted way. So we're really very excited about these developments, and they're based on some absolutely cutting-edge thinking and technology in the deployment of radar. And if I may link that to the question that Honourable... where was it arriving? Tibedi raised regarding the FIFA World Cup, a long-term legacy or short-term? Absolutely long-term. The point about this is exactly that both the Confederation Cup and the World Cup gave us opportunities to test whether or not in a real situation, whether or not these technologies we've been working on for a while work, and they do, and they're working impressively so. We have established working relationships as a consequence of that with the South African Police Service and strengthened them. As a result, this is exactly what a lot of people are saying, coming to us and saying that the border control activities is the kind of activity that they're looking to CSIR to provide the technology service for. And the bigger picture of not just the borders now. Those approaches don't just happen, as you rightly point out, at the borders, but ubiquitously throughout monitoring the country generally, as well as the territorial waters. It's a big issue because the territorial waters, in terms of square kilometers, is actually bigger than the landmass of the country. So it really is a non-trivial problem. But we believe that we have some very exciting technologies, and perhaps next year when we speak again, we can tell you a lot more about it. There was a trial of some of the early work in that regard just recently down in Simonstown, I think. Yeah. Anyway, very much approaching, very much on our side. Digital doorway support, and please, you're very welcome indeed to come and see the digital doorway at CSIR. If you come, we'll show you around. There's no doubt about it. I think the question of support for the disabled we, in the unit of CSIR called Meraka, the ICT unit that has been developing a digital doorway, there is a whole activity on technology for disabled, and it was a project that we're working closely with the presidency. I'll just give one example. One of our employees, for example, who was disabled himself, was not able to type, what we did was to deploy a technology which monitors the position of your pupils, and you have a keyboard arranged across the front, and by simply looking at a particular area, you detect which key they're looking at, and then of course you try also to guess what word they're trying to construct, and then you type by moving your eyes. Is an example of the kind of thing that we are working on. There are others, because we take very seriously the fact that through technology we can empower, can enable all manner of people depending on what their needs are in the particular instance. In fact, we probably don't report enough the observation that was made in reporting our staff complement and so on, and the gender breakdown, we should also say something about the number of disabled people that we employ, and generally to what extent our own work environment is friendly to people with disabilities. But beyond that, it's exactly examples like that I could give others, where through technology we seek to empower disabled people. Now, we're very keenly aware, this is an important one, and it's a lesson we learned very early, that you do not simply decide these are the things that will help disabled people. And the expression we learned was nothing for us without us. We work directly with people with those disabilities, and you bring them on board as researchers in your own organization. Can we then move on, if you are satisfied, Honorable Shagotov, to Honorable Nongonyan, ISI, International Scientific Index, I sometimes forget myself, but it's scientific journals are classified by various categories, and they'll be recognized. It's effectively a quality measure in the world of science. If you publish in an ISI accredited journal, then chances are your stuff is good stuff. Someone can just start a journal, there has to be, and that does happen in the world of science, that stuff can get published in dubious publications. So this is an important proxy for quality. The board question has been answered. The indigenous knowledge, in fact, it is absolutely the case that, in particular in the health area, a lot of what we do is. Should I pause? Oh, okay. Chair, I'm referring. answer into your question. I can give a variety of examples here where we have worked very closely with the people who have the indigenous knowledge on, for example, the manner in which you use plants. A well-known example that we worked on is the Hoodia plant for appetite suppressant. As an appetite suppressant in the working with the San community. There are other examples where we then isolated the active compound that acts as an appetite suppressant, and then together with and then try to find ways to find commercial avenues for that, and then acknowledge the contribution of the community in that by signing an agreement, a benefit sharing agreement with the community, so that if income, there's an income flow eventually from that work, that the community will then benefit from that. So there's indeed this whole area of seeking to add value in a systematic, formal way to leads that arise from herbs and the knowledge that from plants and the knowledge that's invested in communities on how to use them is a very active area of CSR activity. In fact, there are examples, there's something on that actually in the other report here. But we can follow up with more detail. I think Tulani also said, page 36 of the annual report, something on that. Thank you. Global funders, can somebody help?
It's a fund actually that was set under the UN auspices. It's a global fund in the sense of it. And that I think South Africa has been able to access that through the Department of Health, and the rollout to different provinces is via the, I think it's directed by the Department of Health. It's a UN fund that was established to combat, to deal with TB across the world.
Then moving on to Honorable Mulao's question, I believe we've responded, addressed the question of disabled people in the staff complement. You raised that question. The numbers.
It's under 1%. We're not doing as well overall. Just to say though, this year both in terms of refocusing our transformation initiatives, both on gender and on black people and disability. We're currently working on our transformation plan, and we want to have a very specific strategy around employment of disabled people. We've got them, but we think that it takes a lot more than just attracting them into the environment. We need to make sure the environment is also supportive in many ways. So there's a lot of initiatives that we're busy with currently to address that shortcoming. But it's just under 1%.
Certainly report explicitly on that. In fact, we have been asked before by this committee to do so, and so we've been remiss in not doing so. We'll do so. To emphasize the point, once again, I mentioned it earlier, but it's worth mentioning again that you are also very conscious of the infrastructure at CSR supporting the mobility and the work environment of disabled people. We must. Going beyond rent and so on, there was a question about, and again, let me perhaps ask some of my colleagues to help. The seven provinces serving TB, how did we choose those? And is it going to happen at the others? As well as, how did we choose the pilots for the digital door? We have got, I know it all.
Here, as far as I know, the provinces were not selected by us, but through the Department of Health and this global fund, those were the ones that wanted to participate. So it was not our decision in that case.
And there is presence in the Northern Cape.
Yes,
in terms of the process.
I was going to speak.
That perhaps also speaks then to the other question, that do we do this randomly? Do we wait for a hospital to come and talk to us? No, it is absolutely essential. And perhaps this is an area where the portfolio committee can also assist us. We want to develop closer, stronger working partnerships with various departments. We have working relationships with the Department of Health, for example. We wouldn't just go and say, will do this directly ourselves. So whether the issue is low-cost housing or it is hospitals and so on, it is imperative that we partner appropriately with the Department of Housing at national level as well as at provincial level. And sometimes those partnerships we feel could work better than they do. And we would be enormously grateful in some instances for your, in whatever way you can facilitate the better, the oiling of those relationships so that we don't just come to you merely and present and talk to you about what we do, but to feel that we're able also to interact in a two-way process where you are also assisting us, you know, oiling our relationships with various departments and so on. Now,
digital doors. May I just also say what? One of the things we also do is to create guideline documents from these pilot experiences. So those become design standards that can be replicated in other places.
That's an important point, because ultimately our role is not to be involved in building hospitals. There ought to be partnerships. And it ought to be other people eventually do that. The same thing goes for housing, and indeed the digital doorway. We will say this is a prototype, and often what we're then asked is to, let's have a pilot here, and then let's have another pilot there. But ultimately, we view them all as pilots. The mass rollout of, say, digital doorways or having appropriate wards in every hospital in the country for TB patients has got to be something that is driven ultimately by people other than CSR, and this is why the handover process is absolutely essential. 200 digital doorways, for example, it's above mere pilot stage, but it's still a very small number. If you felt that they needed to be, for example, in every one of, let's say, for the sake of argument, how many schools are there? Nearly 30,000, I don't know what the number is. Let's say 30,000 of schools. Wanted a digital doorway in each and every one of them, at least. That is something we would not be able to rise to, because we're ultimately a research organization that does the development, and then the handover, once again, that we need to think about collectively. So that question about where the digital doorways are and how do, it's the same sort of thing. We partner with DST, with the Department of Communications, with various other players, and put pilots in various places. But it is not then our task to ensure that the whole of South Africa is covered, that there's a greater public service role that would have to do, that would have to be done by somebody else. Of course, working with us. May I, Honorable Sheen, a number of questions, all of which, as you said, concern money. When we talk money, I tend to look at my chief finance officer. And,
thanks, Dr. Bisi, and thanks, Honorable Member Sheen. I knew I would not escape any questions on finances from you. Your first question dealt with return of investment and how do we measure it by division. Each of our operating and units and centres have a separate income statement and balance sheet. So we ring-fence them completely from a financial point of view. If we were a listed company, the return on investment would probably just be bottom line. But the KPIs that you see in our executive report are cascaded down to each of our operating units and centres. So the return on investment on, for example, a new piece of equipment may not be a financial return, but we may be able to train 50 students on that in a particular year. So the return on investment, yes, we say to our units be financially sustainable, but they also need to meet their KPI targets, which ultimately build up the CSR targets. And as you saw, that's often number of people trained, number of verses, number of patents, publications, and so on. So not just purely a financial return. In terms of the accounting system that we use and how do we ring-fence projects and contracts, we employ an accounting system called PeopleSoft. It's an Oracle-based system. And on that system, we ring-fence each and every contract that we do. So, for example, if Tulani approves 10 million rand of PG to be invested in a certain area, parliamentary grant, excuse the acronym, all costs associated with that research is booked to that project.
Similarly, if we do a contract for the Department of Defense in DPSS, all costs directly attributable to that project are booked, be it manpower or running costs. In the case of the World Cup tickets, those tickets would have been bought against what's called an overhead project. It's a project with no income associated to it. What this means is a cost on the income statement of DPSS. How this cost is offset, DPSS is our most profitable unit. Their profits are generated from international contracts. They do a lot of work for the Koreans, the Saudis, particularly in the radar area, and there's significant profit margins on those. So yes, they did procure World Cup tickets. The cost of those tickets were essentially passed on to international clients because that's where the profits come from for DPSS. Next question was in terms of royalties. Yes, it's 1% of turnover. It's a number I've often beat myself up over in terms of the royalty stream. Our biggest royalty stream at the moment is from a company called Porsche Protection, and it's work to do on the cash in on armored vehicle protection. The royalty stream is reducing, primarily because of the company's US-based, and the wars in the world are reducing, and there's a less of a need for these vehicles at the moment. Would I like that royalty stream to grow? Yes, I would. It's highly unpredictable, and it tends to be lumpy. We have benchmarked ourselves with other organizations, and they also tend to be in the 1% of turnover in terms of royalties, with the exception that every now and then one of the other research organizations in the world have a blockbuster, and there's a significant income. And it would be fantastic if we hit that one day CSR. But we tend to be conservative in terms of our budgeting of royalties, and there are potentials at the moment where hopefully we can grow that income stream, particularly in the cuts that you mentioned, and I'll address that in your a later question that you raised. In terms of our profit, how do we invest it? If I could refer you to page 120 of our financial statements, you'll see there's a five-year ratio analysis there. And one of the line items is investment in property, plant, and equipment in terms of millions of rands. And you'll see there in 2010 we invested 179 million, the year before in 2009, 188 million, and the year before that, 85 million. Now, that far exceeds the profit we make in the CSR. And we've done that by reinvesting the profits we make in infrastructure. We've also leveraged our balance sheet, making sure we have strong cash flows, leveraging the interest of our cash reserves to invest in infrastructure. Over the past 5 years, it's close on half a billion rand that's gone into infrastructure. Hopefully, we are doing a lot of work in Stellenbosch at the moment, and hopefully on your next visit, the sticky tape and press stick is gone. But there's a lot of development at that site presently. Can we do more in this space? Yes, I would love an extra 400 million rand, but we are constrained by financial reasons. Not all the money is invested in terms of profit in infrastructure. Conservative accountant, I do keep a little money on the balance sheet for a rainy day, just to be prudent. So primarily, yeah, the last few years it's been in property, plant and equipment, our investment there. The budget cuts and how we're handling that, we were informed in September last year by the DST in terms of anticipated cuts coming. Since that day, we put in place a strategy to one, look at cost-cutting measures. We're also looking at our sales gap and identifying areas where we can strengthen ourselves, be it private sector, state-owned enterprises, and so on. And what it also may mean going forward is a reduced investment in property, plant, and equipment. We may not be able to match the levels we have in the past, and that's primarily just because of the funding available. We feel the cuts are of such a nature that the pain can be shared equally across all units and functional support areas of the CSR at this stage. There's no strategic decision to shut down a research area. We're tightening our belts. We're looking at additional sales, and we're considering our investments very carefully to handle those cuts. The bad debts, I must confess, I sat down last night with the financial statements, and I thought to myself, which questions is Ms. Shin going to pose to me? And I was initially very disappointed because I highlighted this as one of them that I thought we'd pick up, so I'm very relieved that you came back to me on this. Our bad debts did increase. And if I can refer the members, it's on page 138 of our financial statements. Our bad debt increased to 3.5 million rand. You need to look in conjunction with that, two numbers higher up is a reversal of an impairment of 7.7 million rand. In other words, we wrote off 3.5, it reduced our bottom line. We reversed an impairment, which put money back on our bottom line. The bad debt written off primarily was a company called BreedTex Pty Limited. It's a company that was spun out of the CSR many years ago. You'll see later in the financial statements, we retain a 20.1% investment in this company. It's a company that employed a number of people for a number of years, competed with Gore-Tex, which is a big American company, and got products on the market. However, with the demise of the textile industry, the Chinese imports coming in, they struggled to compete. They were renting space from us in Port Elizabeth, and they built up a debt in terms of rent that they owed to CSL for renting space. Now, we didn't want to close down a company that was employing people because they were behind on their rent. We wanted to give every chance to succeed. We gave them a rent holiday. Ultimately, when they were liquidated, we wrote that off. It was fully provided for, hence that reversal of the impairment. And this has been coming for a number of years. I think BreedTex was started in 2000, so it operated for a number of years in that space. I trust that answers your questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Chris has given a very comprehensive response indeed. May I just add or emphasize one point, the point about royalties, because it does touch on an important philosophical issue. Firstly, as Chris points out, 1% actually for institutions similar to us is not bad at all. Many institutions do not touch that. There's institutions who are funded with regard to what we refer to as parliamentary grant, at a far greater level in places like, for example, Helmholtz, in Germany. That are still nonetheless realizing levels which are not much greater. Everyone says if we could just get this up to 5%, we'd be really, really, really doing well. But hardly anyone is in that position, except for brief period, when, as you say, it might have a blockbuster and you earn some income from that over several years and then it falls away again. If one looks at carefully at the history of this, the people who started this trend, invested like Stanford, the benefit, and it relates to that return on investment that you were referring to much more broadly for the country. The point, the fact that big companies like Sun, which was Stanford University Network went out and became part of Silicon Valley and generated a lot of income without Stanford having a stake in that company, equity stake, and therefore directly receiving money back from them. It does not mean that Stanford did not do a very good job by way of stimulating the American economy. And indeed, Silicon Valley is startup with companies that were set up either from investors or from similar institutions. And I think that what we would have to collectively look at, we would argue, is exactly your point about return on investment. To what extent are we able to fulfill our mandate of fostering industrial activity, industrial growth, and therefore economic growth in the country by setting up startup companies which become successful? They won't all be successful, but some may fail. Now, whether or not we receive a royalty from that, I would argue, is secondary. The more important thing is, are we adding to the general wealth of the country? Having said all of that, there is this 1%, and there are promises, we hope, of some other streams of income. But sometimes it's a different world. Spend a lot of money to get your money. People violate internationally your patents, and you have to prosecute, and they hope that you're not going to have the resources to prosecute. Now we have to take a view collectively as a country as well, that do we allow, or might we be asked questions about fruitless and wasteful expenditure if we it turned out that we spend 50, 100 million rand pursuing a patent, a violation of a patent, and then not being able to receive any money for all our efforts. These are all things we need to think about. With regard to the last issue that I wanted to raise, you are absolutely right that a lot of the funding in the defense sector is also public funding, whether it's made available directly as parliamentary grant or via a contract mechanism with deliverables. A lot of it will come, say, via AMSCO contracting DPSS, but a lot of it actually is not. It's from external parties. The case in point that led to the 8 million rand royalty from force protection, which was directly a defense royalty, in fact, arising from work that was in large measure, the R&D component of it paid for by the US rather than South African coffers. So it's a nuanced story that we Anyway, thank you. Can we then move on to the questions by Honorable Lai? The SKA and the TB rollout, I think it was related. Are you covered with regard to the hospitals and what was referred to it earlier? Okay. The SKA spin-off, you see, firstly, we must explain that the science system some components of what happens are not within the ambit of CSIR, but the National Research Foundation, the other science councils, medical research council, cancer research council, and so on. The facilities, such as the square kilometer array, is a project, if indeed we eventually win it, that is part of the science system, but under the ambit of the National Research Foundation. So we are not a CSR that directly involved with it. Having said that, there are all manner of technologies, including the very radar technology we're talking about earlier, and other electronics and associated technologies that we would bring to bear in not just the development of SKA, but deployment elsewhere. And a very important element here of SKA is the fact that ultimately what is it? It's a mechanism of looking at the sky, it's radar astronomy. But what it really is a big networked computer that receives data from the sky and passes it around and processes it in a variety of ways and relies therefore on good communications infrastructure. And the fact that we have been directly involved together with the Department of Science and Technology on the rollout of what is called SANREN, South African National Research Network, broadband network, is an important element to enable SKA to work, but it benefits communities well outside the use of the telescope because it connects all the universities and we can have a conversation about whether other institutions and schools also should be connected. So there might be a benefit there with regard to, for example, broadband availability to communities, but it's not other things that you might want to be looking at by way of, say, job creation and so on. A lot of the people who work with a facility like that would be high-level astronomers, scientists, researchers. Of course, it would be a vast facility, so there's no question that there will be employment opportunities. One can also link these to work on energy and so on, but I haven't got enough time to do that. I have a feeling one is not covering you fully on that one, but it's because it's very difficult to relate a high-level science project like that directly, very, very directly, to making an immediate difference in the lives of people in the community. If nothing else, hopefully it will inspire young people to want to pursue a career in science, and that is no mean consequence of a mega project like that. Are we winning the battle against TB? Are we winning the battle against TB? I think what I'm turning now to your question, Honorable Tibet. We would need to be very careful to understand what our interventions are, what our remit is, and what difference we make within what we say. The bigger picture. I think we're always very careful with the statements that we make, lest we are incorrect in saying what we say. It's like being definitive about the return of investment of science. I think this would have to be looked at systematically through the Department of Health, and perhaps with the assistance of the MRC, HSRC, looking at the patterns of infection and so on and so forth. What we can say, however, is that whenever we get it, technology we feel can play a role, we get involved. I'll give an example that we did not talk about here, aside from the TB awards that we spoke about. It is in using what we call nanoparticles. Essentially, who are using our skills and materials to encapsulate in very, very, very tiny particles a drug that a TB sufferer would have to take perhaps every day. And we then, the patient then swallows this and it gets absorbed into the body. And what?
My question was actually in line with your technological infrastructure, not medication per se. I'm saying in terms of the infrastructure that we produce. Can such infrastructure, can we say with maybe a certain level of certainty that it's assisting us? I'm not talking about the operational issues like people like you know, still drinking medication. I'm talking about the function of producing infrastructure, technological infrastructure. Are we up to speed in terms of such infrastructure to deal, machinery for example, to deal with this kind of problem? I'm not sure whether my question is clear.
You're not entirely. But maybe my colleagues can help in this regard. We certainly feel that the intervention, you know, I'm talking about infrastructure now, with regard to what we're doing by way of better design of wards, is an important intervention. But to the extent that we are then able to, and therefore making a positive difference, there's no doubt about that. The question of whether we're winning the war overall, it's got so many other inputs that it becomes a little difficult to give definitive answers. Nonetheless, this is a higher level question that needs to be asked, and the point is well taken. I'm not suggesting that it's a question that does not make sense. We're just not up to answering it fully. Titanium, then I'll give the question of interns, where do they come from, historical institutions, to you, Kungere. I'll answer the FIFA World Cup one and long-term legacy. Yes, there's titanium in South Africa, a lot of it. We have the second largest deposits of titanium in the world, which is why this is interesting. And what we're saying is that all along, we've got all these mineral deposits that we mine, platinum is a case in point, and export, and other people add value, so the income we could derive from adding value in South Africa is enormous. This is a subject also that the chair to my right is also expert. I wonder whether he wants to say something. But yeah, that's a short answer to a question. That's exactly why we are looking at. We didn't choose a random example here, a random light metal. It is one where we really can create an industry in South Africa that would be a shining example of value addition from the mineral resources of this country.
Please, I'm not quite sure whether Honourable Tibet wants to ask a follow-up question to that, but what I would request is that why don't we allow you to, I hope you are almost to this on the...
Just one more question, I think. Where do our interns come from?
Then after that...
After that, we're finished.
After that, you'll be finished. I'm tempted to allow you to ask a follow-up question. And I'm saying I'm tempted not to allow him, because if I do that, all of them, I know they are conscious of that. The other one is looking at me. If I allow Honorable Tibet to do that, all of them will want to ask follow-up questions. What I want to suggest is that if we have got some questions that of interest, I think when we, because members also want to go there, they have got some other, we can have some one-to-one interaction. Not unless it's quite something very, but I'm tempted not to allow you to do that. Can I allow you to finish answering the question?
You, certainly members are very welcome, and we can show you some of the stuff we've already made, examples of injection molding using titanium powder. We can follow up on that. Member, interns.
Thank you, Chair. We open up the opportunities nationwide on all of our people's programs, but we've got very specific collaborations. I can give you some examples with all the universities in particular, but as well as with the
previously disadvantaged institutions. For example, with the University of Western Cape, we currently co-invest on a scholarship program to develop people to master's and PhD levels. With the Walter Sisulu University, the former University of Transvaal, for example, our defense group is sponsoring bursaries at that university. In our nanotechnology center in Pretoria, for example, we've got some studentships studying for masters and PhDs who are drawn, for example, from universities like the University of Zululand. So our collaborations are actually quite comprehensive, and they're not necessarily exclusive.
And on that note, Chair, I believe we have covered all questions that were put to us.
No, I want to, I think, yes, you have covered all the questions in a satisfactory manner, in my view, but there are also some recommendations that were made, whether proposals that were made by members, which I think the office of the committee will have to look into that when we develop our next program. I think in doing our oversight, sort of continuing because we are from there, but I think it's one of the entities that we need to visit as much often as possible, and therefore in developing a program we'll ensure that we then visit you again, and so that honorable members are always having an opportunity to really see the Titan powder, which is quite interesting. It's only that research takes its own time. If that's why people are saying if witches or horses will all rise, because when you see when they're explained of what then titanium is all about and what it's intended to do, they say, oh my God, why is it that it's not being done tomorrow? For an example, people that are going to have the hip replacement, you know more to take the old steel in doing that. You use that which is light in the body and a number of things. So I'm saying in seeing that an eye contact, it really makes that really become interesting. What has been my observation in me closing down is that I don't know whether I thought members will reflect on that. The style of leadership of CSIR, a style of leadership that begins to say everybody is doing something. I'm saying the chair hand over to the CEO, the CEO hands over to the chief executive and the people that are dealing with that area. And I think for me, it's quite, I haven't observed that in other entities. Maybe it has been done in a very limited space, but here I have really given me that it is an institution that is able to provide leadership, and that wouldn't have been done if the governance structure is not vigilant. And it was without the vigilance of the governance structure through the chairperson, we wouldn't have an institution that is able to allow everybody to do the work. I'm a former health worker, you understand why I was passionate about that. Having said that, I do hope in areas that have been reflected on in terms of your representation in the board, please try and improve. We know that in terms of by time you do that, but surely we'll go and visit you. And I want to say on behalf of the committee, I don't know, and science and technology, you are monitored by science and technology. I want to say to science and technology, well done. But I want to say to you, Chair and the CEO, keep it up. It's one of those entities of science and technology that know what they are doing. But the challenge is going out, ensuring that you change, you assist us in changing the social conditions of our people, because that's what is, in my view, bottom line. But secondly, that take away science from people that have got money, from people that think that, you know, where we're coming from in terms of the system of education. And science and technology was there in the corner for people who have got money, white. That's why you will see that in the majority of some, it's old people. Even in other countries, I was in the Czech Republic. That's what we observed. I said, oh, it's not only in South Africa, this phenomenon of science only for males. So I'm saying it's quite interesting that the secretary is intimidating me here. She knows. Yes. But I do think I want to, on behalf of the committee and the chair, want to say thank you very much. And a journey safe back to Pretoria. We are coming as individual members, as the committee, and in our areas where we reside. The Honourable Nonkonyane is a chief, rest assured that in terms of the rural areas, he is one of the people that is so passionate about it, justifiably so. All of us are supposed to do that. Thank you very much. Thank you.